their laughter under the rubble of their homes. And making this trip even a wider slaughterhouse, Ghada Brahim, Gaza City.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Good evening. 46 years ago, one of the fastest and most comprehensive processes of power transfer in history was determined through the ballot box. The decisive development was a crystallization of the historic determination and desire of the Iranians to consolidate the foundations of independence, dignity, and national sovereignty. In a landmark referendum held in 1979, more than 98.2% of all eligible voters said yes to the establishing and an Islamic Republic in Iran. The vote held less than 2 months after the victory of the Islamic Revolution is considered as a turning point in the modern history of Iran. On this national day, we stand at a pivotal juncture to critically examine the achievements and challenges of the Islamic Republic of Iran. In a world fraught with adversity, this system has endured decades of turbulence, persisting through foreign-backed conspiracies, economic pressures, and constant threats of military action. Yet its survival raises essential questions about resilience, progress, and the price of independence. I am Bahman Urey, your host, and in this spotlight, we go over the history of the Islamic Republic and the ups and downs it has gone through. Let us begin with a short report.
The Islamic Republic of Iran. Three words that mark one of the most significant milestones in the country's history. Islamic Republic Day, celebrated on April the 1st, commemorates the referendum that established this new governing system, ushering in a new era, endorsed by 98.2% of the voters, as defined by its late founder Imam Khomeini. Islamic Republic, not a word more, not a word less. 46 years later, the sentiments remain just as strong.
The overwhelming presence of people at public celebrations, rallies, and events is a clear sign of the strong support for the Islamic Republic.
We voted for the Islamic Republic after the revolution because it was our slogan, independence, freedom, and Islamic Republic. This choice aligned perfectly with our ideals and aspirations.
Islamic Republic Day embodies one of the key slogans of the 1979 revolution chanted by masses, independence, freedom, and Islamic Republic. And today, a new generation remains committed to honoring this legacy, preserving the values that have shaped the nation's identity.
I was born after the revolution in the 1980s, and I believe that for us, it brought positive change. I will always stand by and support the Islamic Republic.
The Islamic Republic is the legacy handed down to us by our fathers. It is our duty to honor and protect this legacy so that it may be passed on to future generations.
The establishment of the Islamic Republic did not come easily. Many martyrs sacrificed their lives for us to have it, and it is our responsibility to safeguard it.
But Islamic Republic Day is more than just a national celebration. It highlights Iran's role as a beacon of hope for oppressed nations around the world.
The Islamic Republic is not merely a political system. It is a school of thought and a dialogue with the primary goal of creating justice. Its foundation lies in supporting oppressed people, above all the Palestinian people.
This is why the day serves as a reminder to Iranians of unity and solidarity that extends far beyond the nation's borders.
Iranians are marking the anniversary of the Islamic Republic with national pride, reaffirming their commitment to regional peace and progress towards a brighter future. Gizem Shahmadi, Tehran.
This is Despot.
the Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to the Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back. Allow me to introduce my guests. Saad Shah, author and commentator, joining us from Belfast, UK. And John Stepling, author and commentator, joining us from Inderøy, Norway. Gentlemen, very good to have you on the programme. I'm going to start with Saad with the first question. 46 years of the Islamic Revolution, and despite all the conspiracies, all the attacks, all the sanctions, it has survived. What do you think is the key to the survival of the Islamic Republic of Iran?
Hello to you and your guests and your audience. The Islamic Revolution of Iran, it wasn't just a regional event. It was a global, and it was a huge global earthquake at the time that resulted in enormous geopolitical shift in the region. It's still shaping and influencing West Asia today and all the Arabic and Islamic world as well. The impact that revolution have in Western imperialist forces, it weakened them since they lost the control of the Shah, who were deploying the huge country of Iran to the service of the imperialists, and to be looted by the Zionist entity and by the Western forces as well. So while this Islamic revolution was straight away when it broke, erupted in Iran, it's empowered the Islamic and the Arabic world. It's brought about what we call today the Islamic awakening, which is still that thing influencing and shaping the countries in the region and the movements worldwide. So, but it came, the Islamic Revolution as well, let me just allude to this. It came in a very important and a precise point in history, which we witnessed neutralizing of a major power in the region, like Egypt at the time, after signing the Camp David protocols between Sadat of Egypt and the Zionist entity fascist head at the time called Begin. That signature removed Egypt totally from the camp at the time you stand against Zionism and colonialism and placed it under the American domination. And that resulted immensely in strengthening the Zionist entity and provided with political recognition from the largest Arabic and Islamic state in the region. So give them free carte blanche on Palestine and to attack the resistance in Lebanon and in Syria. So the eruption of the Islamic Revolution, it changed that. It tilted the balance of power back to the people in the region. That is one of the major points which denied the Americans a free hand in the region and start forming what we have today, the axis of resistance.
Right. I'm going to talk to John right now. John, why do you think the Islamic Revolution's discourse has survived so many years, so many decades, and can still stand up to the dialogue offered by the West?
I think its durability is rather remarkable, actually. Certainly, the United States and Israel, which is an organ of the United States, essentially, has never made any bones about wanting to bring the downfall of the Republic. And you have to remember that the Shah of Iran was a U.S. puppet. He was installed by the U.S. and the CIA and the British helped. He had the most notorious secret police probably in the whole of the 20th century, trained by the United States. The U.S. gave him what intelligence it had, and they were very happy because he did what he was told. There was a lot of sort of theatrical visits to differing countries, but Pahlavi simply listened to what the U.S. said. He knew what he was supposed to say. He knew what his policies were supposed to be. And this was a typical CIA playbook kind of a coup that they orchestrated, getting Mossadegh out, putting in the Shah. They've done very similar things, a dozen other places. What is interesting is that when the revolution came, the United States had no intelligence about it at all. They did not expect anything. They did not see it coming. And this has been one of the reasons, I think, that the political class in the U.S. harbor such animosity towards Iran, is they were made to look very foolish. And it was just a massive failure, an intelligence failure. So there's that history looming over everything. And of course, the other reason is that every other country in the region has been subjected to some kind of U.S. incursion, some kind of conflict. And certainly Iran has participated in conflicts too, not particularly willingly, but everybody, every country that surrounds Iran has had problems. The U.S. has military bases surrounding the country. Iran is surrounded by U.S. military, and yet they have survived. And not only that, they have a reputation for an extraordinarily adept diplomatic corps, an extremely smart and savvy sort of deep state. It's renowned for this. So they have the respect of all their neighbors, and I think that the few times that Iran has tried to reach out to the U.S., the JCPOA and things like that have ended badly because the U.S. doesn't keep its word, and I hope that the current administration in Iran has learned that lesson. And the other point is, since the revolution, Israel has wanted nothing more than a war with Iran. That's been clear.
Right, Saeb, John mentioned something very important, the military bases of the United States around the country, and at the same time, the failure of the last time the two countries started to have some sort of dialogue. We've had throughout the history of the Islamic Republic, we've had all sorts of conspiracies against the Iran. We've had, like, even Saddam Hussein invaded the country and with the support, full support and backing of the Western bloc. They even gave him chemical warfare against the country. And all of these terrors and assassinations by the Israeli regime in Iran, nuclear scientists were assassinated. You know, why all sorts of obstruction, why all sorts of aggression against the country that came with the slogan of peace?
As I said, the Islamic Revolution of Iran, it wasn't just regional. Some people misunderstand it. Some people think it's just a regional country who have a massive revolution. This is have three side effects for it. There's a global, and there is regional, and there is local to Iran. The global became of this influence of the Islamic Revolution. It's in power shifting and power distribution. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, it was felt very well. The United States of America have a free ride to control and loot the resources of the whole world and enslaved many countries and fought any countries, even who were close to the Soviet Union. At the time, we noticed even the Russians themselves, the Chinese, become dominated by the unipolar power, the United States of America. West Europe, today, they just discovered they were totally being occupied and controlled by United States of America after the American to throw them under the bus when they were negotiating with the Russians about the Ukraine. So this is one of the global and start in regional building its own resistance camp facing the United States of America. You mentioned the massive war which they supported Saddam Hussein in launching on Iraq. So they didn't want to leave Iran 1 minute to breathe and to develop itself. They kept the wars on it. They kept the sabotage operations against the scientists. They wanted to disrupt all the development and the sciences advancement in Iran. The whole forces in the world, when they see in Iran, this is advancing and facing that monsters of imperialism, they started themselves to have shaping. You know what we have today is regional powers, and it's developed to some alliance which today we have the BRICS. This is during the hegemons of the United States of America on world affairs, this wasn't even a dreamt with. But the resistance, which is Iran, showed them an example, encouraged a lot of countries to start and to break away and to form their own multipolar system in the world, which we see today with the BRICS, we see with the Chinese, we see with the Russians, we see with South Africa, with Iran. And right. The Islamic revolution in the local level brought to the people of Iran dignity, as you mentioned in your report, sovereignty, independence, and freedom from the criminal white supremacist colonial domination that looted the country during the Shah.
Exactly. You mentioned the key point of independence. If it was one of the key principles of Ayatollah Khomeini's vision for the future of the Islamic Republic. My question for you, John, is how do you think this independence played such a key part in the formation of the state and in redefining the relations the country had with the world?
Well, the United States expects other countries to be obedient, to listen to what the message from Washington is, and to follow the lead of Western diplomats when they visit. This is just expected. And those times when countries show resolve and independence, the United States is shocked. They're angry. They're appalled. They feel they have to discipline this delinquent child in their eyes. And Iran has simply never allowed itself to be pushed around at all. And again, this speaks to the respect that it has from its neighbors. It may not even be liked by many of them, but everybody respects Iran. And they have earned that respect. The U.S. is flailing at the moment. The Trump administration doesn't quite know what to do. He's threatening everybody. If it's not tariffs, it's bombs. And he's got some super hawks in his administration right now who, before the election, Pete Hegseth and Rubio and all these people had said they absolutely want to bomb Iran. The first thing I'm going to do is bomb Iran. Then, of course, when they talk with the Pentagon, they talk with the Joint Chiefs, they talk with advisors, and they realize, oh, well, this would be a very bad idea. This is not a simple, tiny little country that we can push around. And in fact, I think given how thinly stretched the U.S. is, they simply can't. They can't engage in another confrontation with anybody. But this returns me to Israel again. Israel, the Greater Israel Project, the expansion, we see it with Syria and Lebanon right now. Netanyahu in particular has always wanted a war with Iran. He has pushed for it relentlessly for 30 years, and he hasn't gotten it. And the reason he hasn't gotten it is that there are a few sane heads in Washington and at the Pentagon who know very well it's simply an impossible thing to do. The U.S. can't even stop the Houthis from shutting down the Red Sea. So I think that Iran has demonstrated a kind of integrity and independence in the face of a lot of provocation, assassinations of key figures and so forth, and they have remained extremely level-headed and with great resolve, and that's all you can expect, I suppose.
Right, as John mentioned the issue of Israel, I want to talk to you, Saib, about one of the biggest accomplishments of Ayatollah Khomeini in shaping the foreign policy of Iran in the beginning of the new government and in the new structure in Iran. And that was the issue of Palestine. He put the issue of Palestine on top of Iran's foreign policy agenda. How do you think, many experts and analysts are saying that this helped bring the issue of Palestine from being a rather limited regional Arab problem and issue to something global, and the world was kind of awakened to it. What's your take on that?
It's a good question. The first thing when you notice after the Islamic revolution of Iran, it's felt in the streets of Palestine, a copycat of the Islamic revolution in forms of the resistance, from appearing, first of all, the Islamic wings of the Palestinian revolution, from Islamic Jihad, then later on to Hamas, was formed. The guidance of that was the Islamic revolution of Iran. Then the habits of the Palestinian people start to adjust itself socially, culturally, with the Islamic revolution of Iran. This is important. And the resilience developed in there. Since I mentioned after neutralizing Egypt, Israel got a carte blanche attacking Lebanon, occupied it in 1982, destroying the Palestinian presence in Lebanon, attacking the Lebanese resistance, American landing in Lebanon as victorious with the French forces. Even the resistance would start developing in 1983, attack them and push them back. In the year 2000, the resistance, which were supported by the Islamic Revolution of Iran, managed with the leadership of Hezbollah at the time to cleanse Lebanon from this occupation. And this is at the global level, as I said. You have countries like Venezuela, when it was besieged and blockaded by the United States of America, its neighbor. The Iranian Revolution sent ships of some oil and gas, liquid gas, and the food and supplies, medical supplies, and technologies to support the people who has been oppressed by the Americans. This is felt, there is a network of resistance was forming from the transatlantic to the Indian Ocean, Pacific Ocean. And thus, Iran gave an example to a lot of countries to stand in its position facing the Americans. Unipolar kind of act in the world and domination in the world. And the Islamic Revolution set that example, and lots of countries start to follow suit. Lately, I want to emphasize this, the EU itself, following the Iranian example, when they want to try to build their own military force now, they're trying to build their own economies, they're trying to show themselves as independent from the American
government. Right, Saib, allow me to jump in there for the sake of time. Because you mentioned the achievements, the scientific achievements of the country, I wanted to actually ask you about that. It's a question for both of you. First, Saib, please go on, because you were already talking about it. Despite all the sanctions and the cruel, illegal sanctions that Iran is on, that basically the entire life of the Islamic Republic, it has been under sanctions. But we are seeing so much progress in science, in the nuclear industry. We can see how Iran has progressed despite all the assassinations, all the plots to delay the progress and everything. What does that tell the world? What kind of message does it send across?
The message is very clear. The leadership of the Islamic Revolution was able from the beginning to guide the Iranian people toward building capable, independent state, politically and economically. And then they start achieving their scientific development. This development is indigenous in Iran, become localized from industry. Progress in various fields, you're talking about even apart from the sanctions and the wars and the aggression and the sabotage and all of these symbolizing operation, covert or overt operation. The revolution, Islamic revolution, opened the way to the country to develop itself and build solid scientific and industrial base that was advanced. You know, in nanotechnology, Iran is one of the leading countries of that base and have with its research centers. Iran today, while it's facing the imperialist powers who is wanting to do a regime change just to keep looting the country after that, is a strong, capable, independent country who can stand firm against imperialism and against the terrorist and assassination operation. Because the United States of America and Israel sending squads of death, you know, death squads to assassinate scientists in different fields.
Right,
this is how they try to destabilize the country.
Thank you, sir. And John, one final question. Of course, I wanted you to also talk about the same question, but Iran has maintained its influence in regional politics and diplomacy despite all the efforts by the adversaries. 1 minute we have. Please, your take on that.
Well, again, they have extraordinary integrity. They've kept their word with partners. Their diplomatic corps is renowned for its intelligence and again, its integrity. Yes, under sanctions, they have managed to prosper and achieve enormous things, but this is much like Cuba, like Venezuela. Cuba has been under sanctions since their revolution, and yet they produce more doctors than anywhere in the world. Iran is the same kind of story.
Right.
They have not squandered their role in the region. They have supported Hamas. They have supported the right side of everything. They are friends with the right people. It's just very sound and intelligent leadership, I think. And it's not the kind of cuckoos that we see, sadly, in power in the EU and US right now, let alone, of course, Israel.
Thank you so much, gentlemen, for the conversation. It was a great honor to have you on the program. Saeb Shaiv, author and commentator, joining us from Belfast, UK, and John Stepling, author and commentator, joining us from Inderøy, Norway. And thank you so much for staying with us on Spotlight.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Mahdi Rastani.
We know that Ali had many characteristics that shined very bright.
The reality is all of these characteristics at the end of the day came down to the worship of Ali and the relationship that he had built with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. There is no more ego left for Ali. This part we don't understand. This part we can't comprehend fully. There's no more ego left for Ali. Ego completely lost. This is a high standard. You and I just have to weaken that ego at least. Yes? That's what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala expects from us. But this is why his worship was the way it was. So Abu Darda, companion of the Prophet, he says, I was walking one night in the palm trees, heading home, and I heard someone crying in the middle of the night. Darkness of the night. I saw someone is crying. He says, I looked closer. I said, huh, this is Ali, he's crying. I looked a little bit closer. I saw the way he's crying is a way that I've never cried myself. He's crying as if God is going to throw him into hellfire right now. We're going to talk more about why Ahlul Bayt worship like this. He says, I listened to him the way he was pleading to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the way he was talking to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It was quite astonishing for me. He says, I continued to listen. All of a sudden, I found the sound cut off. What happened to Ali? He said, I came closer. I saw Ali has fainted. I ran home to the house of Ali, knocked on the door to tell Fatima, salawatullahi wa salamu alayha. I went there to tell Fatima quickly, your husband, he fell on the ground, he's fainted, you have to come do something. He says, when I came and told Fatima, I said, he fainted. And Fatima said, yes, this is what happens to him every night. This is normal for Ali. Because he faints out of what he sees of the beauty and the greatness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This is the worship of Ali. There's no more ego left in this man. And so when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala tells him, go left, he'll go left. Tells him, go right, go right. Go straight, go straight. It doesn't matter what God tells Ali. Because he's removed his ego, now everything is open. God just tells him what virtue he wants to see in him, and it's a done deal. That's it. Ali continued on this. For you and I, if we can just weaken our ego, yes, through our worship. But with Ali, he went to the next step. He continued on this. And this is why you find, the narration says, when the time of Salat used to come, he would start in wudu, start to go pale. And they asked him, Ya Ali, why are you going pale? He said, I'm going to meet the one who gave me this opportunity of life. So he saw things you and I didn't see. And this is why Ali has that famous line that many of us have heard. He said, yes, people who worship Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, they are of three groups. Yes, we've heard this narration. He said, there are those who worship in the hopes of heaven. فَتَلْكَ عِبَادَةُ tujjar. This is how the businessmen do worship, yes? And he said, there are those who worship out of fear of hellfire. And I hope I'm in that category, because I know I'm not in any other category. He said, this is ibadatul abid. This is the worship of the servants, the people who are afraid of punishment, yes? And he said, there are those who worship Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for himself. And this is the worship of the special servants of God and the free servants of God. Ibadatul ahrar. But if you want to do that type of worship, that means you don't even have an ego left anymore. You don't even see yourself. So what do you see? You see God and you see him worthy of worship. That's it. Anytime you think you fall into this third category, I have bad news. More likely than not, we don't fall under this third category. The overwhelming majority of people who've ever lived and will ever live will not fall under this category. But Ali was in this category. And you see how beautiful it was. He was in this category and all the way at the top. So you find even other ma'sumeen, when they used to look at the ibadah of Ali, they used to look at it and wonder, how does Ali worship like this? So Imam al-Baqir, salawatullahi wasalamu alayhi, he says, I came to see my father one day. This is Zainul Abidin, yes? This is the one who is known for his worship. He says, I came and I walked in. The moment I walked in, I saw him. He had been worshiping for so long, his color had gone pale. And his legs were inflamed because he was standing for so long. And he had
cried so much that his eyelids were somewhat wounded. He says, the moment I saw this, I was affected emotionally. This is such an emotional moment to see. He says, when I came and saw my father looked at me. He told me to be calm. And then he said, listen, I do all of this worship, but this is nothing compared to the worship of Ali. He said, go and bring those papers that are over there, those documents. I brought those documents. These are narrations about what Ali used to do from history. He looked at it and he said, you know, which one of us will be able to do what Ali did? This is the fourth imam. And we look at that and we find this is extreme. Why does an imam cry until a point where his eyelids are wounded and his legs are inflamed and all of this kind of... Why would someone, we ask ourselves this, why would someone put themselves through this difficulty? Crying, worshiping like this. But when you're in that state of mind where your ego is completely gone, you don't even see yourself anymore. It's not so much trying to put yourself through that pain. It's just that you're worshiping. You're so in awe of this worship, this stuff naturally happens. This is the natural consequence of it. You want to understand, I'll give you an example. You can completely understand why Ahl Bayt, when they used to worship, they have descriptions of it that seem extreme to us, and they are. But you'll understand their state of mind. I'll give you an example of someone who's not spiritual at all. Furthest thing from spirituality. The Quran tells us the story of Yusuf, no? And in the story of Yusuf, what happened? Zulaykha had that evil intention. She pushed for it. Yusuf ran. All of this kind of stuff. When everything came to an end, what happened? Zulaykha started to hear the chit-chat of the women, the other women in the city. They said, yes, Zulaykha's obsessed. And they started to blame her. Zulaykha's fallen in love with this person, this young man who's in her house. He's a servant for them. She's fallen in love with him and all this kind of stuff. And what did Zulaykha do? Zulaykha knew her stuff. Zulaykha pulled off a very beautiful plan. She said, okay, فَلَمَّا سَمِعَتْ بِمَكْرِهِنَّ When she heard, said, okay, you guys are going to talk about me like this? Let me give you a taste of what it's like being around Yusuf. فَلَمَّا سَمِعَتْ بِمَكْرِهِنَّ أَرْسَلَتْ إِلَيْهِنَّ Sent for him. Brought them. وَأَعْتَدَتْ لَهُنَّ مُتَّكَأَ She prepared for them places where they could sit and pillows and so on and so forth. Comforters. This is a luxurious palace. وَآتَتْ كُلَّ وَاحِدَةٍ مِّنْهُنَّ سِكِّينًا And he gave a knife. She gave a knife to each one of them. وَقَالَ تِخْرُجْ عَلَيْهِنَّ And Zulaykha said, Yusuf, go! And what happened when Yusuf walked out? All of a sudden, فَلَمَّا رَأَيْنَهُ أَكْبَرْنَهُ They saw Yusuf. They said, oh my God. وَقُلْنَا حَاشَ لِلَّهِ They said, no, this is not possible. مَا هَذَا بَشَرًا This is not a human being. And then what does the Quran tell us? وَقَتَّعْنَا أَيْدِيَهُنَّ Yes? They started to cut their own hands. If you are walking by a group of people and saw them cutting their hands, wouldn't you look at that and say, oh, this is extreme. What are you doing? Why would you hurt yourself like this? And what would the women of Egypt tell you? They will say, listen, you don't know what we're witnessing. We're not even acknowledging ourselves right now. We don't even understand what's happening. Our eyes are in awe of Yusuf. And hence we cut our hands. It's not that we want to cut our hands. It's that naturally our state of mind is somewhere else. We're so in awe, we don't even understand we're cutting ourselves. And this was a servant of God. So then Ali would come and witness of the beauty of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And then we say, why was his eyelids wounded? Why was he doing this? Baba, he doesn't see himself anymore. He doesn't cry to wound his eyelids. He cries and he's so much in awe that if the eyelids get wounded, if the knees get hurt, he doesn't even understand sometimes. This is the state of mind that they had. Yes, Ahl Bayt are not expecting this kind of stuff from you and I. Ahl Bayt are expecting very, very, very small from us. But they set the standard.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد. وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا
عليه. In the limelight.
Administrative detainees held without charge or trial now represent more than a third of Palestinian child prisoners. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, Palestinian boys, mostly 15 to 17 years of age, but sometimes as young as 12, have long been targeted by the Zionist regime military for arrest, detention, and prosecution. The Zionist regime is the only regime in the world that automatically and systematically prosecutes children in military courts, with between 500 and 700 Palestinian children detained and prosecuted annually. An increasing number of those children have not been charged with any crime and are held under administrative detention orders. They are part of the largest cohort of Palestinian child administrative detainees in history. Since the Al-Aqsa storm operation on October 7, 2023, Israeli regime forces have seriously escalated their efforts to arrest Palestinians, including children, in large numbers. The most consistent source of prisoner numbers is the Israel Prison Service, which releases headcounts once a quarter, including breakdowns by age and charge, or lack thereof. Human rights groups like the One Defense for Children International, Palestine DCIP, monitor these numbers, document prison conditions, and collect testimony from prisoners. The numbers alone are alarming. For the last year, each time the Israel Prison Service has released headcounts, the number of Palestinian child detainees held in administrative detention was the highest it's ever been. The latest headcount, 112 Palestinian child administrative detainees, as the end of December, is almost five times the number of children held without charge prior to October 7, 2023. Child administrative detainees now represent more than one in three Palestinian child prisoners. Israeli regime forces have rapidly expanded their use of administrative detention to exert control over Palestinian children and families in the occupied West Bank. The Zionist regime authorities enacted harsh restrictions on access to Israeli prison after October 7. Family visits were suspended entirely, and visits from lawyers representing prisoners became extremely difficult, frequently rejected by the Zionist regime authorities. As a result, DCIP's lawyers have primarily collected testimony from children after their release from Israeli custody. All reported that prison conditions have deteriorated significantly, with Israeli prison guards regularly serving rotten food, denying access to toilets and showers, and crowding cells with twice the appropriate number of children. The food is poor quality, uncooked, and insufficient for us as children. It causes me difficulties because I suffer from stomach problems. That's what 16-year-old Jamal, who spoke under a pseudonym for safety reasons, told DCIP, describing the situation inside Ofer prison, adding, "There is little comfort in the cell, as there are not enough beds for everyone. Some of us are forced to sleep on the floor in shifts." The Zionist regime forces detained Jamal from his home in Arub refugee camp in southern occupied West Bank over the summer, after previously shooting him in the knee with live ammunition. On the date he was detained, he was scheduled to have surgery to repair the injury. Jamal told DCIP, "The soldiers exploited my injury, forcing me to sit and kneel on my wounded knee for 5 hours. I was severely beaten if I moved due to the pain," adding that the pressure caused his wound to reopen. Jamal said, "They put headphones on my ears and played songs at loud and annoying volume for an hour and a half, knowing that I suffer from weak hearing in my right ear, and this caused me pain in my left ear and head." Israeli regime interrogators are notorious for carrying out acts of physical and psychological cruelty against Palestinian child detainees in order to extract a confession. While international legal standards underscore that children accused of a crime have the right to have a family member and lawyer present with them during interrogation, Palestinian children are afforded neither. Jamal was never presented with charges. Instead, Israeli regime forces detained him pursuant to an administrative detention order. This meant that neither he nor his family had any idea when he would be released, what he was accused of, or even he would be able to go home. Now, as hundreds of Palestinian prisoners are finally being released as part of the true agreement between the fabricated regime of Israel and the resistance movement Hamas, some child prisoners are returning home to their families. The Zionist regime authorities are threatening their families in an effort to stop them from speaking on the media, yet another effort to isolate children and their families. The Israeli regime military's widespread and expanded use of administrative detention to target Palestinian children amounts to arbitrary detention and has no standing in international law. Until every Palestinian child is released from Israeli regime custody and this practice of targeting children is abolished, we must continue fighting to reunite children with their families.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Scores of Palestinians are killed in the latest Israeli strikes on the Gaza Strip as the regime continues its aggression against the besieged territory. Hundreds of Israeli protesters clashed with the regime's forces during fresh demonstrations against Netanyahu outside his Likud party headquarters in Tel Aviv. And Iran reiterates that it does not seek war with any country but will not hesitate to defend itself at the highest level of readiness and capability.
Welcome to the program.
More Palestinians have fallen victim to Israel's incessant air and artillery strikes in Gaza as the regime's genocide rages on unabated across the besieged territory. The regime targeted a